This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.
This is Good Morning NoCo with Brian Carey and Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFK.
News for Northern Colorado, presented by CRP 4x4 Truck Outfitters. I am Tanner Schwint, Brian Gary, my co-host. And this is a story that we've been tracking for quite some time now. A man was arrested on suspicion of defrauding about $300,000 from a Greeley family by leading them to believe they would make back $15 million. William Harris, 68 years old, was arrested Saturday on charges of crimes against an at-risk person or elderly adult and theft. Greeley police started investigating the fraud back in September after Harris was arrested in Larimer County for defrauding about $153,000 from a man. We had that story, right? We talked about that story. And Larimer County deputies told Greeley Police Department, hey, I believe there's more to this. I think there's a Greeley woman who connected Harris, and the man was also a victim, according to Harris's arrest affidavit. The woman estimated that she and her family paid about $300,000 to Harris under the belief that they would receive $15 million in return, according to the affidavit. The woman, then 81 years old, told Greeley police in October that Harris had told her his grandfather had millions of dollars hidden, in that Harris was working with Vice President Kamala Harris in the Department of Homeland Security to exchange the money from old currency to new currency. But William Harris claimed that he needed to pay taxes before the money would be released to him. The woman said she and her family found the story to be convincing, and that's when the payments started. The woman and her family, including her now deceased husband, son, and brother, started giving Harris money to help pay the taxes. She used money from her Social Security checks, pension, savings account, and profits from the sale of her brother's house to pay Harris. She would send the money through cash, checks, or deposit the money into Harris's bank account. The woman never got any of the money she was promised, nor was she reimbursed for the payments she thought were going to the taxes. The woman alone gave Harris $145,950. Her family paid the rest of the $300,000 Harris got from the group. Some of the money was deposited into a bank account owned by Harris's wife. She denied knowing about the money being paid to her husband in an interview with police, according to the affidavit stating her husband had access to the account and debit card in this.
Yeah. I find it hard to believe that you wouldn't know.
Yeah, oh, that, the wife?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that all probably. Of a sudden there's all this money.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know. I don't want to get into personal attacks there, but this all, it's number one to prey upon somebody.
Yeah.
Who is vulnerable or, you know, maybe not as educated on scams like this. To prey on them is scum.
Yeah.
Completely to me. Also, we all have to be smart enough to look into if this seems too good to be true. I think these days it's relatively easy to at least find out if there are suspicions or not.
But I believe this one was face to face. Like, I think this was a family friend.
Where it was just somebody friend. Who took advantage.
Yeah. Not like the call.
It's not like a fishing out there and
correct.
Getting somebody to bite on it. This was
targeted.
Intent looking at you and saying, I'm going to do this. That cuts a lot deeper if that's the case.
And here's the kicker. When the woman ran out of money to give, she told the Larimer County victim about the false investment opportunity. Another victim also reported that Harris scammed her out of $4,500 in 2023. She told police that her family lost their house in a fire, and she met Harris while working at her family's restaurant a short time later. Harris introduced himself as an officer working with the Drug Enforcement Administration, which that also has to be a crime, right? False representation.
Yes, absolutely.
and also said he was a former player for the Kansas City Chiefs and had a Super Bowl ring, according to the affidavit. Harris told the woman he made large investments and said he would be able to get her $100,000 if he invested with him. After she gave him the $4,500, she never saw him again.
Yeah, there's some bad people out there, some bad scammers.
So about $450,000 in scams done by this guy. $153,000 from an individual over in Larimer County, the $4,500 that we heard from that other victim, and about $300,000 from that woman who ran out of money to continue to invest. Harris is scheduled to appear for a disposition hearing. I believe that's deposition, isn't it? Hearing, yes, on March 24th at the Larimer County Justice Center in Fort Collins. He's also scheduled to appear in court for a deposition hearing on April 14th at the Weld County District Court. 68-year-old guy that's pulling this scam off. Well, he was. Not anymore.
Yeah, just... Scamming people in those situations just makes me sick. I can think of one situation years ago when we were raising money to be in our 28 Hours of Hope. There was one gentleman who sold himself as young guy who invested his money and owned some Little Caesars pizza places and these kind of things, and that he was good friends with John Lynch.
Mm.
And that he had talked to John. John was going to come on the air with us and make donations. Came into the studio, wrote $20,000 checks to each of these organizations, and said John was going to come in. We kept waiting for John's call. Then we finally get it, and it finished, and I thought, that seemed fishy.
Really?
And turned out it wasn't John Lynch. This guy was actually a criminal who then had to serve time getting convicted of what we were raising money to fight against.
Oh, my God.
And you talk about a straight path to hell to me.
Yeah.
For an individual, it's that person.
That's and insane. I didn't know that story.
Each organization thought they were getting another 20 grand than they did. Made plans on it. They were all set. And then as time passes, you realize we all got taken.
That's insane.
We all got taken. And those people are out there.
Yeah.
When you know there's a part of the population that would stoop low enough,
mm-hmm,
to go after charities or people who are in a position like that.
Well, I remember.
There's a special place for them.
You know, I agree wholeheartedly with you, Brian. I agree wholeheartedly. And I had never heard that story. That's just absolutely disgusting.
Just horrible.
But I remember we did one of these, and you know, the Greeley Police Department there was blackmail going out there. They were mailing, remember, explicit photos of child, you know, of children being molested, and kiddie porn is what they were mailing to people, and then saying, hey, we know what you have in your mailbox, like, you need to give us money. Hey, you know, there's been a number, yes, of these scams that we've done over there, and I remember talking about it in one of our listeners, Sport, because I said, they target the elderly community, and this isn't a knock on the elderly community by any stretch of the imagination.
No, but they're just in the crosshairs.
The world's just not what it was, you know, that thought of Good Samaritan, you know, with some
of
these.
The benefit of the doubt is gone.
Yes, and that's why the elderly community is the one targeted in this.
They're used to believing what you read and
yes,
to have some trust and...
Right.
Yeah, those.
That's
you can't
why.
View the world that no. way anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah. News for Northern Colorado presented by CRP 4x4 Truck Outfitters. This is kind of a cool story to wrap this segment up on.
Good.
Three bronze bison sculptures created at a Loveland foundry will find their forever home in front of the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. on March 19th.
Wow. Have you ever been to Smithsonian?
Yeah, way back when.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Along the way, the sculptures will make several stops at other museums, beginning in Denver on Wednesday. The Loveland Reporter Herald reports over the last 14 months, Missouri artist Gary Staub has been working on the three sculptures, the largest being a 2,500-pound, nearly 10-foot-tall bull at Art Castings of Colorado, located over in Loveland. I mean, that's got to be the ultimate reward, right? You spend 14 months building this stuff, and now they're going to be on display at the Smithsonian.
That's fantastic.
Coming right out of our backyard over in Loveland.
You got to love that.
Yeah. I mean, and the pictures of it are just incredible, how big these sculptures of these buffalo are.
We have some amazing artists around here who are able to create some incredible things, and that's cool.
Yeah, they're very cool. So for the full story, go to 1310kfka.com. There you go. News for Northern Colorado presented by CRP 4x4 Truck Outfitters. Access to over 6 million parts online at crp4x4.com. 7:18 the time now. You are listening to Good Morning NOCA. Just realized on this day, every one of us turns a little bit more like Micah Kilpatrick.
What do you mean?
Oh, I'm so tired.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of it, but you know, when it comes down to it, I'll complain. I hate the time change. I do, but now that it's here, get over it.
I was texting with Micah at 7:30 last night. 7:30 early, you know. That's about the time the Sunday scaries creep in, and I'm trying to finalize. I'm sure you and I were texting at that time. Yep. I'm just trying to re-engage right with the work week, and I'm just like, hey, you know, we got a client coming in at 9:30 to record. That all good, and just a reminder. And of course, blah 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 blah. Then at 6 a.m. this morning on the dot. I don't hear anything back from him. He texts me back once, and I'm like, Michael, like a couple more times, nothing. 6 a.m. this morning, sorry, I fell asleep. Sleep is hard to get. Must get it when I can. I'm likely asleep now. Don't wake me up, and I will be in at 9:30. So he must have woke up at some point, and he has figured out how to schedule text.
Oh, he does. Yeah, I get scheduled texts from him, too.
It's just... But today,
he'll tell you in the text, I'm sleeping right now, but I'm sending you this text.
Don't wake me up. Sleep is hard to get.
Yes.
Okay, Mike. But today, we all turn a little bit more like Micah Kilpatrick.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some of that going on.
So I freaking love that UNC got the 5:30 game in the Big Sky Tournament.
Yeah.
Because Wednesday night, it'll be when the Bears are inevitably playing for their shot at the big
more like big an games. 8 tip.
It's a 9 o'clock tip on Wednesday. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Brian's staring at me in disbelief.
Okay. That's well, at least it will feel like 8 o'clock.
Yeah, correct. The problem is the next morning is going to feel like.
Hey, if I can sit up and watch them.
Yeah.
See them advance tonight, and then it goes to that. I will sacrifice my sleep to see that.
Me too. Yeah, Thursday show might be a pile of crap, but because we'll still be riding the high, you know, if they go and do it.
If they're going to do it.
All right. I like that. I like that. I want to welcome a new partner of ours to the program, the Michael Ray Lee Foundation. You may have read about them in the community. This organization, John and Amy, are helping to keep their son's legacy alive. Mike Ray Lee was the best that life had to offer, a champion golfer, All-American at the Colorado School of Mines, Colorado Golf Association match play champion, devoted husband, son, and friend. And on December 22nd, 2020, at just 28 years old, Mike lost his life due to COVID complications. But his legacy lives on through the Michael Ray Lee Foundation, and we're honoring his passion for golf education and community. We're asking you to help us keep Mike's name alive and continue changing lives. Visit MichaelRayLee.com. They've got their golf tournament coming up on June 19th.
Fantastic.
At Boomerang Links. Have you heard of the new nine-hole like kids golf course that they built out there at Boomerang?
No.
Yeah, that's because of the Michael Ray Lee Foundation.
What a brilliant idea to help young people, you know, go out and actually play.
Yeah. In just 5 years, the foundation has raised $760,000.
Bravo.
And reinvested over $500,000 into the community, supporting junior golf, scholarships, and local programs from the Mike Lee Nine. That's what the name of it is over there for the city of Greeley, the Mike Lee Nine, to school golf initiatives and collegiate teams. Lives are changing through the game that Mike loved. Be a part of something bigger. Sponsorships are open and sell out fast for the golf tournament as well. Visit MichaelRayLee.com. That's MichaelRayLee.com and help us build opportunity through golf. And we're going to have John and Amy in at some point. They're somewhat emotional. They've got good ties with my wife and my father-in-law, and I've known the story from a distance and getting to listen to John and Amy, right? Like, I was applauding them on what they've done. I'm like, this is losing a child before... You know, before you is something you shouldn't, nobody should have to go through. Just 20, at my age, 28 years old, Michael Ray Lee passed away due to COVID complications. And to hear the story and to hear what they've turned tragedy into for a game that is so therapeutic for so many, but so difficult to get involved in for so many as well, to see that they are stepping up and trying to bring the game of golf to anyone who wants it. It's an incredible organization and a great, great story. And so we'll have John and Amy in later on this month, but the Michael Ray Lee Foundation, that is michaelraylee.com.
Yeah, a great example of how you can persevere and somehow find good,
yeah,
you know, in the most horrible of situations, but to be able to do something to keep that name alive and know that it is changing and make a difference in something that he loved so much.
Yeah, $760,000 in just 5 years is incredible. So MichaelRayLee.com, that's MichaelRayLee.com. 729 the time now. You are listening to Good Morning NoCo.
Everybody said we wouldn't make it, baby. Love don't live around here much lately. Times are hot and hearts break like the bang.
No deception, no games, no tricks, just a smooth-running car at Auto Taylor. Online at autotaylor.com or on 16th Street and 10th Avenue in Greeley. They're simply the best. We use them all the time.
Yep, and need to call them up, get my daughter's vehicle worked on again.
We got to get back to the days where we were the rides that each other gave to and from Auto Taylor, because there was always a stop for breakfast and possibly a mimosa tower.
This is true. We haven't done that for a while. Boy, my car could use a service today, Tanner.
All right, and construction poll question this morning. It is National Barbie Day. We want to know, what was your favorite childhood toy growing up? HVAC guy. Morning, guys. Happy Monday. When I was super young, it was the Tyco slot car set.
Oh, yeah.
Then the original NES came out, NES.
Yes.
And it was gaming consoles from then on out. But when I got older, my favorite toys have been building RC cars and trucks, especially tricking out rock crawlers. HVAC guy, you got to get to CRP 4x4 Truck Outfitters next time you're in Greeley.
No question.
The Jackwagon RC is just incredible in there.
Their selection's phenomenal, and their knowledge is second to none.
Well, and I got to tell you, too, you know, as he brought up gaming console, I was trying to hide how young I am, but we had a GameCube, a Nintendo GameCube.
Oh, yeah,
was the first one.
Yeah, I had every format of Nintendo for a while.
And that GameCube was one that we had the Monster Truck game on there. And there was this journey you had to go on, right, to compete. And there would be levels that were too hard. And that is the only time, aside from Wii bowling or Wii boxing, that I saw my old man pick up a remote. And he would step up and beat the GameCube game on the Monster Truck Racing for us when Tori and I got stuck. Where when we weren't good enough to do it, my dad would step in there and get it done. And we were always Gravedigger. I mean, we were always Gravedigger.
But Dad could get her done on the trucks?
He could get her done. On there,
that's cool. We had every type of thing, and there were some weird ones that only lasted for a short period of time, you know, like you talk about the GameCube. Good right. Luck finding anything like that, you
we
know
still
right
have
now
ours.
Well, and we still have a Sega Dreamcaster,
oh,
which was just it did not last for long. Lasted long enough to put out the Kiss Psycho Circus video game, which was the whole reason for this system. But yeah, we've still got that packed away somewhere. I've got the original Nintendo NES as well.
Nice.
My Mike Tyson Punch-Out and all those games.
I know we some of our cousins had the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, we moved up to that.
How many people now, whenever there's a problem, feel like, hey, can you just blow some air into it and it'll clear it out and you'll be good to go? I caught myself doing that with my charging port on my phone the other day.
I do it quite frequently with things. You can't say you haven't tried to fix it until you've done a... Yeah.
Yes. Kyla commenting here this morning, and I don't know if she's giving us the action here. Tongue twister here with, all right, here we go. Baby go bye-bye in her bumpity buggy. But that's the baby go bye-bye in her bumpity buggy.
That does not surprise me. Kyla had quite a few dolls back then, and now and then we find parts of them that creep me out.
Yeah,
so like
it should.
A Toy Story box of parts.
Kelly says baby Chrissy. Do you know anything about that?
I do not.
I don't either.
I did not have baby Chrissy.
Faye says, my handmade dollhouse my sweet daddy made me. Real wood and hand-painted, made all the furniture, too, and I still have it.
That's really cool.
A lot of responses coming in this morning. We'll get to more of those throughout the course of the morning. That is our right-hand construction poll question. What was your favorite childhood toy? 7:36 the time. Chris Vanderveen, Director of Special Projects for 9 News, joins us next. But first, the KFK News and Sports Center.
There's only one feeling like knowing your banker personally. Like growing up with a bank you can count on. Like being sure what you've earned is safe, secure, and local. There's only one feeling, like knowing you're supporting your community. You deserve more from a bank. You deserve an institution that stood strong for generations. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
.743 the time now. Welcome back into the Aloe Fiber Studios. I'm Tanner Schwint, Brian Gary, my co-host, and joining us now on the Clearwater Products Hotline, it is Chris Vanderveen, Director of Special Projects for 9 News. Chris, good morning, my friend. What's got your attention here on a Monday?
Well, I was out of town all last week, so if you're going to ask me anything that happened in Denver last week, I have no idea, because I've been in Indianapolis.
What were you doing in Indianapolis?
Journalism Nerd Conference. There's a really great organization that I'm part of. I've been part of for a number of years. It's called Investigative Reporters and Editors, IRE. It's really sort of the country's preeminent organization for investigative reporters around the country. And there's an offshoot of it called NICAR, which is a data journalism conference. And so it's sort of like cutting edge abilities to sort of report, get information, query databases, all that sort of nerdy stuff that journalists like to do. It's always good to hang out with fellow journalists. I mean, I know we're mostly despised in the country, but when you get to hang with other journalists, you get to realize that we're actually really good people who just get annoying on occasion.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough, Chris.
When you meet with these people across the country, does it seem like you're all facing very similar problems, or is each state bringing a unique batch?
Yeah, I think it's similar and different. Whenever I go, I'm reminded of, and I had this conversation with people all last week, was this idea that, like, this idea that journalism is dead, that nobody's doing good journalism anymore, is nonsense. There is unbelievable, cutting-edge, remarkable journalism taking place every day in this country. And I would push out that I think there's more good, amazing journalism taking place now than there ever has been. There's also a lot of noise. There's also a lot of nonsense. There's also a lot of things that aren't great about the industry. So that's one thing. I'm sort of reminded of that. Two, we're all facing similar issues with survivability, with adaptability, with the ability to change in this sort of very different atmosphere that's coming for journalism. There's lots of ifs. There's lots of changes on the way, and survival is paramount. You can't do journalism, and no one afford to be able to do it. So I think as we enter into this very interesting time for journalism in the next 2 or 3 years, I think it's key to sort of remind ourselves that there are really good people that are doing journalism around the country. And two, that, like, you know, we're all sort of in the same boat to some extent. We have to survive. Journalism is remarkably important for the present and future of this country.
I think we're seeing, the journalism landscape shift a little bit as well. I know, I noticed your own Steve Stager, a lot of social media stuff. I'm seeing that more and more. How do you see that shift starting to happen where, it's not just your normal broadcast on the television, or hearing us on the radio, but also getting into those social media channels?
Well, I am not sharing any company secret when I say this, but the CEO of our company, we're owned by a company called Tegna. We're in the process of merging, getting acquired by another company called Nextstar. But the CEO of Tegna talks a lot about, look, we're a broadcast company, and broadcast is dying. It's just the reality. The amount of people that watch sort of like a set time newscast, whether it be 5 o'clock, 5 p.m. or 10 p.m. or 6 a.m. in the morning, the amount of people that are watching those newscasts is way, way down. And the idea that people are just going to magically come back and decide to watch the 10 o'clock newscast or 6 o'clock, that's not going to happen. And so smart broadcast companies are sort of asking themselves, how do you make sure that you have survivability? And a lot of that's online. And so what you're seeing now is a lot of companies, Nine News is included, is that there's lots of streaming availability. You can get, you know, we are trying to meet our audience where they're at. Now, it used to be, there was such things as appointment television where people would just sit down and watch the 10 o'clock news at night. It doesn't really happen as much anymore. There is a small percentage of people, and to be quite honest, it's an older demographic that's watching, and the younger demographic is not. And so we have to sort of figure out. I mean, the good news is that I believe it strongly that people still want news. We have a product I think we do a very good job of, but you know, you got to find people where they're at, and that's the biggest challenge for journalism moving forward is. How do you make sure that you could still afford to do good journalism, but also do it in a place where people will meet you? And also, like, recognizing that you cannot be sort of like, I think what journalism learned a few years ago is becoming slaves to social media algorithms is not good either. If you notice, like, it wasn't that long ago where journalism was very dependent upon Facebook. And so a lot of stuff went on Facebook. And then Facebook overnight basically changed the algorithm and started to de-emphasize news. And all of a sudden, all of this work that media organizations had put to getting their product online through Facebook disappeared because Facebook didn't want it. And so we have to recognize, like, we can't also sort of be so dependent on social media that we make ourselves vulnerable to that problem. You talk to anybody in broadcast, they'll tell you the same thing. Facebook, I think it was a game changer. When Facebook decided that they're going to change the algorithm, de-emphasize news, it made organizations say, hey, maybe we need to go on our own. And that's what you're seeing as well. You're seeing less of a dependence. Look, there's lots of people on Instagram. Instagram can make individuals money, but they don't make news organizations money. We still have to make money to survive. And so I don't know. I'm not smart enough to figure that question out. But I do know, you know, as long as I think if I got to believe if you provide the content that's worth it, and you give it to the people where they're at, I think there still always will be a market for news.
You tell me we're going to see Chris Vanderveen doing the next dance craze on TikTok?
No, you will not. there's great, like, social media is a blessing and a curse. It allows you to get voice out. Whereas all of these people have left broadcast, and they're not watching, you know, Nine News as much as they used to in the past on broadcast. I believe strongly that we probably have more people that we interact with every day than we've ever had.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It's just that broadcast is where the money is. It still is where the money is, where the ad revenue is. And the ad revenue is not nearly as much on the digital side. And until that swaps over and we start to make money on the digital streaming side, there's going to be this in-between period. Everyone, in order for there to be viability in broadcast in the future, you've got to de-emphasize broadcast, and you've got to emphasize online, meeting the audience where they're at. We're in a really weird time because we're still making all this money on broadcast, and yet broadcast isn't making the money that it used to. So this is a transition period. Now I'm getting super nerdy on you guys, sorry, but like I think this is important because this is why the evolution of news is happening right now. It's a really weird time, and you're feeling it. I guarantee the audience is feeling it.
Yeah, for sure. That's the thing. And you got to be careful. And Brian and I have talked about this ad nauseum. But, you know, one of the things I think was a mistake with newspapers was the paid subscription, right? You give me those numbers and then you get a competent sales team that goes out there and sells those numbers. Because just there was a huge story here in Northern Colorado. And I went to the comment section. It's like, I shouldn't have to pay to read it. But it's also like, you know, these outlets, they've got to make money. So it's a fine line to walk.
Yeah, and so everyone's trying to come up with the secret sauce to make that money. And I agree with you, like, paywalls are tough, but like when your product is what you have to sell, like, you have to make sure you make money to do that. Like, it's just like you have to keep the lights on. You have to pay for people to work there. Journalism is not nearly as easy as people think it is. In fact, I think it can be a very, very difficult job. And so you need highly skilled people to do it. The more highly skilled people you have, the better. But at the same time, the more highly skilled, the more money that they require. So it's like it's this cycle that is really, really challenging to break out of. But at the same time, like I said before, like, we have to have strong journalism in this country. Like take, for example, we have a war, essentially, like a quote-unquote war taking place in this country right now, in the Middle East with Iran. There has been, as I talked about you before, there's been zero effort, very little effort by the administration to sell this conflict with the American public. And you're seeing really good journalism taking place about what's really going on the ground in Iran, in the Middle East, what it's doing now. There's going to be a lot of talk today about oil prices and gas prices and energy prices. And so, like, this is a good time for there to be robust journalism. And I know it's taking place. I saw a lot of it last week in Indianapolis, and you'll continue to see it this week. But you'll also see some of the nonsense, too. And I wish there was a way we could filter out the nonsense, filter out, like, the TikTok dance videos, yeah. And, like, actually have news. But we'll see.
I look forward to that day. I most definitely do. And I don't think there's ever been a more difficult time to push good journalism and the truth, because there seems to be, whenever anything is put out, when from up above the relationship is making you question what you read, I guess the bottom line is, when Trump has been the most difficult to work with, in my mind, as far as battling the information the press tries to put out. Do you think it'll get easier in the future?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think, you know, one of the issues is that it's much easier to get people mad than it is to inform people of the truth. And so what happens online is that we've now created an entire factory of people that are just there. They don't do journalism. They may carry the veneer of journalism, but they're not journalists. And they get paid money to get people mad. They get lots of clicks to get people mad. And we are the product. As I've said to you guys all the time, like, that we are the product. And people say they want news, and I think they do deep down. But it's like, man, when you are a slave to the algorithm, and when it's just there to make you mad, and that's what you're clicking on, you're not becoming more informed. You're just becoming more mad.
That's true.
And that's a really bad place to be. And if I would put out that I think many of the problems that we're facing in this country today, in terms of just politics and people getting along, is based on this idea that we are the product. We are this part of this giant social experiment that is designed, in practice, to get us mad, to make rich people more rich.
Yeah.
That's frightening, right?
Yeah, no, it's well said, Chris. And sometimes you just got to get back to the basics of it and say, we're not supposed to interact with that many. As a human species, we're not supposed to react with that many people. And with that being said, we'll continue on with our broadcast here. Chris Vanderveen, Director of Special Projects, thanks for your time, buddy.
Thanks, Chris.
There you go.
See ya.
Let's jump out and get the latest with the Daybreak Ag Report. Coming up, let's talk a little World Baseball Classic, Team USA. What's going on with that? Well, also, the NFL free agency window kind of opened last night. What is going on with the Denver Broncos? We'll bring you the latest on that as well. Ernest Cienfuegos Baca will join us from United Way of Weld County. It's Good Morning NOCO, presented by Lemons Heating and Cooling on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.